Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast. And now your hosts, Ben Folks and Chad Dundas.
That's right. You're listening to another episode of the Co-Main Event Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm Chad Dundas. That's Ben Folks. We're both longtime MMA journalists, and for the last 11 years, we've been meeting here every week to break down all the action in the wild, weird, and occasionally wonderful world of mixed martial arts. Ben Folks has been gone for a solid week. He was out there in New York City with his two children, taking them to a Broadway show, running around the Big Apple. If you follow him on Instagram, you saw multiple posts of him just dadding out of control, taking his kids to various museums to bore the shit out of them with the great works of worldwide art and, you know, basically shipping them around the city, showing them the sights. I feel like we're going to need a check-in here, Ben Folks. The first thing that I wanted to ask you, though, is we have both spent short times in our lives living in New York City.
Yeah.
And this was a long time ago for both of us, before either of us had children. And I remember, even at that young age, the spry young age of my 30s, there I was running around New York City. I used to see people with children in New York City. I used to see people trying to get their strollers on and off the escalators to get up and down from the subway. And I always thought, these poor sons of bitches, how are they doing it? How are they even living with these children in New York City? So I want you to tell me, what was it like just to have, now your kids are older, you don't have them in a stroller, for God's sakes, but what was it like to have, what is it, like a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old, something like that?
8-year-old and a 10-year-old. It was fine, honestly, because we're not fucking around with any strollers these days. The one thing about taking them with me on a trip like this and trying to show them, trying to put a little culture into these hayseeds who were born, have grown up their entire lives in Montana. And I'm taking them to the museums, as you say. I'm showing them around. I'm showing them the big city, all that kind of stuff. We're riding the subway. And still, you know how it is when you go places with kids, when you take kids on vacation. They, if you ask them about their trip to New York City with their dad, what they're going to tell you, first off, the big, bold, breaking news headline of the entire trip, Jed, they saw a dog wearing Crocs.
I mean, that is a big city thing to see, right? Like,
it is. Don't see a lot of dogs wearing Crocs around here. I mean, they were both wearing Crocs themselves at the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think it really hammered it home for them. But it's like walking around Tribeca and you see a dog in a pair of Crocs and they went, what? This truly is the capital of the world.
Cultural capital of the world.
I'll be honest, though. When I took the week off from doing this here show, I took the week off from even really noticing what was going on in the world of fight sports. I'm coming in here cold on a Monday. I've been getting really into Slam Ball now that okay. I follow them on the Instagrams.
You know what? So, you told me. You were like, hey, automatic follow for Slam Ball on Instagram. Yeah. And here I am, Instagram neophyte, essentially. I'm just starting to get my feet wet over there on mm-hmm. Instagram. So I've also followed Slam Ball. And I don't know how the algorithm exactly works over there on the Zuckerberg products with the Instagram and the Facebook, but I see a lot of Slam Ball now.
Yeah.
A lot of Slam Ball.
A lot of Slam Ball content.
So I feel like I'm up to date at least on
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I think I really messed up in that, you know, you start following one or two hockey accounts on Instagram and they're like, okay, so you're kind of a sports guy, huh? Would you like to follow some accounts dedicated to 80s and 90s professional wrestling? God damn it, you know that I would. I'll go ahead and follow those. They're like, how about this? What if we show you this clip of a brawl that happened at a baseball game? Are you interested in that? Sure, I am. The next thing I know, I'm getting served up nonstop content from some kind of very serious adult male wiffle ball league. And I'm like, how did we get here? I don't
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
But the Slam Ball shit, I mean, that's just good content, man. Just good fucking content.
Well, we're glad you're back. I'm sure that you saying right up front that you're coming in cold and may not know anything about this week's topic is going to be great
Don't
for
know
listener
shit.
Retention.
Yeah.
People who tuned into this podcast are probably like, yes, I will listen to an hour of this guy who hasn't watched any of these fights. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be great, I think, for the listenership. Speaking of cultural capitals of the world, while you were out in New York City, I took the family to Northern Idaho. And
okay.
we went to the Silverwood Amusement Park. And
only reason to go to Northern Idaho
and water park there. We actually kind of balled out of control with the water parks. We went to the Silverwood water park. We went to the water park in Kellogg, Idaho, which is an indoor water park where you and I were for my 40th birthday party. Remember that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was missing
you. Balling out of control.
This time I was missing you. I was like, where's Ben Folks? How am I even supposed to get on the kneeboard wave machine mm-hmm. if Ben Folks isn't here? The only reason I bring this up,
put you on a tube and shove you down the water slide.
The only reason that I bring this up is that we were at the Silverwood Amusement Park in Northern Idaho at the portion of the park that's called Boulder Beach, which is the water park there. And Ben, I saw for the first time in my adult life a Bellator MMA t-shirt in the wild. Now, you might see a Bellator MMA t-shirt at a Bellator MMA event.
Yeah.
You might even see one at a UFC event.
Might
Hell,
see
you
one
might see one
on the mats at a local jiu-jitsu tournament or
you
something.
You might see one in Las Vegas fight weekend just walking around.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen one just in general population. I've never seen one in Gen Pop before just walking around. There I am at the water park. This guy just walks by me wearing an athletic gray Bellator MMA shirt with the logo front and center. And the first thing I thought was, who does this guy know? That was the first thing I thought. Like, who's this guy know who's in Bellator? Because otherwise, you wouldn't be wearing it, right?
Your second thought was, is this a Pitbull brother? Is this maybe a Pitbull cousin?
Yeah, Randy Pitbull, just at the water park there with his family.
Now I have some questions. For one thing, was the design current? Could you tell this is a...
Hold on. Let me Google Bellator real quick.
Current Bellator, were we talking about the old school, like back when the shit was on ESPN Deportes and YouTube and nowhere else? Like, are we sure?
I think this was, it had the B on it. You know, the B that's kind of in
okay,
the
yeah.
circle. I think that's the current Bellator logo.
And it was just like a t-shirt, just for Bellator, like Rob Lowe out here wearing the NFL hat.
Yes.
Like, not really any specific event or fight or anything. It was just Bellator.
Yes, that's correct.
My other question, was the fellow in question wearing it as kind of like, here I am at the water park. Maybe I'm a little shy to take my shirt off for one reason or another. I got to wear a shirt around at the water park. But I don't want to wear, you know, my Gucci. I'm at the water park. Stuff could happen to the shirt. I need it to be sort of like a gym shirt, doing stuff around the house shirt, you know, cleaning out the garage on a Saturday afternoon kind of shirt. Could you get a sense of where this shirt fit into this man's particular clothing hierarchy?
it did cross my mind that perhaps this guy hadn't worn one of his A-list t-shirts to the water park, that maybe he has some shirts that he considers expendable. And maybe that was one of the ones that he would wear to the water park. I didn't get the impression that he was wearing it out of shame. He didn't look like a guy who's going to go. He wasn't in the water when I saw him. He was like walking around out on the deck. And I didn't get the impression that he was going to wear it going down the water slides or anything like that. It is possible.
Was it Bjorn Rebney?
It might have been. I don't know. Maybe he grew his hair out for all I know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just wanted to bring that up as a guy who's covered this sport since the 90s. It was the first time that I had ever seen a Bellator MMA shirt in the wild, which is, you know, it was notable to me.
It is notable. Like a dog wearing Crocs.
We really, that was a synergy between those two stories. I hadn't thought about that, mm-hmm. but the guy in the Bellator shirt and the dog wearing Crocs, this you know, parallel mirroring there in our stories.
Yeah. And just really tells you something about the different kind of weeks we had, you know?
Remember, you're listening to the Co-Main Event Podcast proper. This show drops every Monday afternoon for free in your timelines and your podcast libraries. That's not all. You can find the Co-Main Event, Ben Folks, and myself all week over on Patreon. Hit us up at patreon.com/co-main-event and get loads of extra audio and video content, as well as access to our official Discord message board. The coolest people in MMA are constantly chatting it up over there, where the only rule is no assholes. And here's something pretty new and exciting. You can sign up right now for a 7-day free trial of our Patreon. You get access that you would get at the $5 level. If you've been wondering about the Patreon, but you're not sure what it is or how it works, you can check it out right now for free over there at patreon.com/co-main-event. We tell you this every week. We can only keep making the show with the support of our awesome listeners. Come party with us. We think it's the smartest, funnest, most welcoming group of men and women talking fights online. So head over to patreon.com/co-main-event and sign up to join the team. You could also scoop up some dope CME merchandise if you head over to our merch shop. You'll find old favorites like the original Dundasso t-shirt, the old school Cowboy Astronauts cigarettes t-shirt, and you'll find a lot of cool new stuff like brand new Are You Fucking Kidding Me t-shirts, the hottest seller on the market, the Bobby Knuck shirt, and of course, the brand new Volcamania shirt. Just head over to our website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top of the page that says shop. We're partnering with our friends at Superconductor on the shop. They are a brand and design studio from Portland, Oregon, and we recommend them for all your design needs. Hit them up over there at studiosuperconductor.com or on Instagram at Studio Superconductor. Music this week from Stockholm-based producer Simeo. We also know him as Co-Main Event Podcast listener Alfred Larson. If you like what you hear from him on the show, you can check him out at soundcloud.com/Simeo. That's S-E-E-M-I-O in Simeo. Three rounds as usual this week in the Co-Main Event Podcast. In round number one, Jake Paul did that thing he does where he beats up an aging MMA legend that he has a significant size advantage over. But for MMA fans, I'm wondering, is it starting to hurt a little less? And in round number two, Corey Sandhagen didn't win great reviews, but he did win the fight against Rob Font. And in round number three, let's be honest, Vicente Luque and Rafael Dos Anjos are probably going to have a good fight at this weekend's fight night event. So take that for what it's worth. All that plus Are You Fucking Kidding Me and Just Saying Stuff. But first, like we always do about this time, let's do a little bit of listener mail.
Listener mail.
This week's listener mail is once again brought to you by NordVPN. Kids, have you signed up to get your free bonus month from NordVPN when you go to nordvpn.com/comain and or you use the code to sign up, Cobain, that's all one word, comain. If you haven't, you really should. With NordVPN, you get the fastest VPN on the planet, NordVPN. Provides online protection with a single click. Don't miss your favorite content. Even when you're traveling, you can stay at home virtually. Stay safe from malware and threat with threat protection. Ben and I both have it on all of our devices. We use it all the time. Ben, I know you love NordVPN. What's your favorite thing about using it?
Well, Chad, you know I love how NordVPN will click on as you bounce from public Wi-Fi to public Wi-Fi to keep you protected. Doesn't matter where you are. Doesn't matter if you're down there at the Gershwin Theater catching a matinee showing of Wicked. Doesn't matter then if you're up the street at the pizza joint getting yourself a slice and some garlic knots. Doesn't matter if you're trekking all over the city to find a specific ice cream sundae that comes with a slice of chocolate cake on top that your daughter found out by Googling, does New York have milkshakes? NordVPN has got you covered, Chad. You can also access Nord's amazing cybersecurity apps, including the NordPass Password Manager, helping you keep all your passwords straight and close at hand. And with the NordLocker encrypted cloud storage app, you can keep your files backed up, synced, and protected from snoopers, loss, or malware in a secure cloud. Nobody will see, touch, or sell them.
Could you use NordVPN if you were at the water park in northern Idaho?
Absolutely, you could.
Could you use it at Riverfront Park in Spokane while your kids are playing in the sandbox?
Sure, you could use it as you're Googling, was that Bjorn Rebney I just saw?
What if you're down in Coeur d'Alene and there's a street fair going on and you're walking around and you're eating some Mexican street corn?
That's when you absolutely should use it. Street fairs are notorious for hackers.
You can sign up right now for any of NordVPN's handy two-year plans and get an additional month for free by going to nordvpn.com/comain or use the code comain. This includes all the plans. You can get the standard plan or the plus plan or the complete plan. It's risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/comain or use the code comain. First piece of listener mail this week comes to us from Darkwing Duck, who
Did
writes...
you hear from him?
What'd you think of longtime CME favorite Tanner Boser moving down to light heavyweight and getting the win? Ben, Tanner Boser showed up 205 pounds. He went out there, main card of this ESPN Plus Fight Night event over the weekend in Nashville. We were at the Bridgestone Arena, granddaddy of them all down there in Tennessee. 17,792 in attendance, according to the Wikipedia page. I'm not going to say Tanner Boser's decision victory was the most exciting thing in the world, but he did kind of look like a legit light heavyweight, and he looked like the move down made him the bigger, stronger guy, and he was able to, in some cases, muscle his opponent around the cage here. And, you know, we didn't think Tanner Boser was all of a sudden going to go hop, skip, and a jump up there and be the heavyweight champion. So if he can get some wins down here at 205, which right now seems wide open for a new guy to come on the scene and blaze a trail for himself, I'm all for it with Tanner Boser.
Well, weren't we just talking about his blistering take on the sponsorship situation in the UFC and how it made us a wonder, is Tanner Boser trying to get out of his UFC contract, or is Tanner Boser even still under a UFC contract? And then a few weeks later, he shows up here, wins this fight. I mean, he had lost two in a row. So you combine that with talking a whole bunch of shit about how bad the sponsorship situation is. This was one that was probably better to win than to lose, just for career longevity. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Probably was. This was one of those fights that was better to win than it was to lose.
Still, I mean, you know, good for him going out there and getting the win. I always think it's interesting, and we're going to see another one of these examples coming up this week where you see Big Daukus, Chris Daukus, you know, he's going down to light heavyweight after running into a little bit of a roadblock at heavyweight where all these big guys kept knocking him the fuck out. And then decides, okay, maybe I'd be better off being a 6'2" light heavyweight instead. But it's so tricky because you go, all right, maybe some of these big guys are a little bit too big. Maybe I need to move down in weight where I could be the big guy. And it's like, okay, yeah, you could do that a little bit. And yet, the same way that there are two heavyweight divisions, there's a couple different light heavyweight divisions in the UFC. Because you can come down there and be like, okay, I'm bigger than some of these other guys. But if you do win a few and start to move up in the world a little bit at 205, then you're going to run into some dudes who are not small guys either, but are also pretty goddamn athletic. You know?
Yeah.
It's not as simple as just being like, screw this, messing around with these big guys. I'll especially if you're like a 230-pound, 240-pound heavyweight or something, I can see how you think, okay, let me get my shit together. Let me get on the diet a little bit. Let me go down here and bully some people. I don't know if it's that easy, though.
Right. Man, Chris Daukus better be careful. We're not even going to be able to call him Big Dacus anymore if he keeps moving down. They got Kyle. Kyle's still at 185, so Chris, he's still the bigger Dacus, that's for sure. But he can't go much further. He can't go much further. I'm going to start getting confused over which Dacus is which.
He does have to plant his feet and make a stand as the Big Dacus at some point.
We don't want little Dacus to overtake Big Dacus as the bigger Dacus. That's all I'm saying.
If we end up with two roughly the same size Dacusi, I feel like that could have consequences we're not prepared to deal with.
Spider-Man pointing at each other gif. Next question this week comes to us from Matt Webb, who writes, guys, do we need to give Tatiana Suarez the title shot? She made it look like Jessica Andrade was on her first day of jiu-jitsu class, just dominant in every way, every fight. Her versus Zhang Weili would be interesting discourse. This was impressive that Tatiana Suarez was able to come out here and do this to Jessica Andrade, who up until this year was considered, you know, right up there at the top of the women's strawweight division as a perennial title contender. And let's talk about Jessica Andrade in a moment. But of course, Tatiana Suarez missed a couple of years. She had serious injury, had to go have surgery on her knee, missed a lot of time, came back. This year, she's rattled off two wins, both of them second round guillotine submissions, first over Montana De La Rosa, then over this Jessica Andrade in this fight. Over the weekend, she won a performance of the night bonus in both of those. She has improved to 10-0, and she looks every bit like the title contender we thought she was going to be when she came into the UFC back in the late 2010s. She doesn't look like she's missed a beat, frankly. And with the win over Jessica Andrade, I don't know if you give her a title shot immediately, but she's in the conversation now, no question about it. And let me just say, I think it's good to see, because Tatiana Suarez was a person who had all the potential in the world the first time around. And then, you know, the knee injury unfortunately sidelines her for a long period of time. So it's good to see her come back and still be the same person that she was and still be as dominant as she had been in these two fights this year. I applaud her for it.
You know what? This one I actually did see live. I was over there in the Salt Lake City airport.
Okay.
Trying to get my kids a snack during our layover. A snack that, of course, you know, are they going to eat it after I've spent like $40 to buy them something to eat in the airport? It's a toss-up. I'm standing in line there waiting, and I'm looking over at like one of these little sports bar kind of things they got in the airport, and I see on the TV above the bar, Jessica Andrade down there, you know, doing her pre-fight thing where she's down there and her mean mug and crouch kind of thing getting ready during the introductions. And I went, oh shit, here we go. Like, let me buy you this mac and cheese and a sandwich you're going to complain about because it has anything at all on it, while I try to check out what's going to happen. And I was like, I hope we're not going to go the full distance here, because I don't know if I have that much time. I don't know if this sandwich is going to buy me that much time. Fortunately, we didn't need all three rounds in this one. This one felt like the kind of thing where, okay, we are glad to have Tatiana Suarez back. We feel like that maybe there is more of a future here than there is for Jessica Andrade, who seems like, you know, we put her in a few of these fights where we didn't seem like we were necessarily trying to be in the Jessica Andrade business. When you look at the last three, Erin Blanchfield, Yan Xiaonan, Tatiana Suarez, doesn't it seem like all three of those, the UFC is like, we're excited about the other person?
Yes, absolutely it does. Let's talk a moment about Jessica Andrade. I think you made the sentient point there that it feels like she has become a bit of a stepping stone, at least in the eyes of matchmakers. She lost to Valentina Shevchenko in her most recent title shot. That was back in April of 2021 for the women's flyweight title. She moved down to strawweight last year and had a couple of wins there. And this has been a bad year for her. She beat Lauren Murphy in January, but since then has run off three consecutive losses. Jessica Andrade has fought four times this year, and we're only a little ways, you know, past the halfway point. She fought in January, February, May, and August. So, you know, she might fight three more times by the end of the year and set a record for fights in a year. Maybe she'll be right back on top. But it's been a precipitous fall for Jessica Andrade this year. She's those three fights in a row, and especially this one against Tatiana Suarez, it felt somewhat definitive in terms of like how we're going to think of Jessica Andrade moving forward.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm all for the idea that the way you get money in this sport is by getting in there and fighting. And if opportunities come along, especially, you know, how fighters can be after a loss, they want to get back in there and get a win. But it's like, you can mess around that way. And especially if they're going to slot you in for a bunch of blue chip prospects that they think are really going places. And the next thing you know, you look up and you're on a 3-fight losing streak. And it's kind of desperation hour when it seems like, damn, just it wasn't that long ago you were the champ.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Next question this week comes to us from professional rugby player Petro Sivaniska.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering if we were going to hear from him.
Sivanikiva probably nailed it. He writes, I assume you fellas heard the chant echoing throughout the world over the weekend. Rug, 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 rug. That dude is good / terrible. Does he? Ben, ONE FC had been trying to set up this fight between Rug Rug and Marcus Buchecha. You're the jiu-jitsu correspondent for the Co-Main Event podcast, so you might know better than I do how to pronounce Marcus Buchecha's name. I believe Buchecha is one of those Brazilian nicknames that then just become your last name.
One name deals, yeah.
And so ONE FC has been trying to put together this fight between these two guys for 3 years, and it kept getting postponed and canceled, et cetera, et cetera. They finally put him in there over the weekend, finally got him into the cage, and what you got was a 15-minute slop fest, although it had some fun moments where these guys went out there and brawled with each other. Rug Rug ultimately outlasts Buchecha in a fight where Herb Dean warned him three times, I think, in the final round for grabbing the gloves, grabbing the shorts, grabbing every part that he could possibly grab here. He got the yellow card, which, yeah, you don't want to get the yellow card from Herb Dean over there in ONE FC, but he does emerge with the victory. I believe he is 6-1 in his career, is Rug Rug, and, you know, doesn't seem like he's going to be the number one ranked fighter in the world anytime, but if you tell me Rug Rug is fighting, I'm going to try to see it. I'm going to try to see Rug Rug fight if you tell me it's happening.
Yeah, I mean, and isn't that really a more reliable way to go about an MMA career and get some money and get some notoriety than just trying to be the absolute best in the world? We've seen that go wrong even when you succeed at it.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get paid a whole lot. Now, I have not seen this fight between Rug Rug and Buchecha. I did hear a whole lot about it. Is it the kind of fun that it's worth me going back and looking for it?
Well... what else you also, got going on? That's just, do you have anywhere you need to be? Do you, are you reading a book? Is there any, how's your entertainment time? If you got the time and nothing else to do, you might as well run it back. But you're not going to die if you don't see it.
How are you going to be Herb Dean out there in a fight like this, talking about wanting to take points away or warn people about grabbing stuff? I mean, we're doing Rug Rug in fucking ONE FC, right? Like, let's, I mean, like our man, you know, Rodrigo Do Campo would say, here's the rule book, Chad, it bends, you know, like if we can't bend it for a Rug Rug fight, that seems like the one time where we want to be like, okay, normally this kind of thing is frowned upon. However, you guys seem to be having a good time. I'm gonna let you go.
Rug, 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 rug. He did get a $50,000 performance of the night bonus, which leads me into this next question, which came to us from Brendan over on Patreon. He writes, watched ONE Fight Night 13 on Saturday. A fun, exciting time, a mixture of martial arts, Rug Rug winning a slop fight, and the generous Chatri Sitchatung giving multiple fighters $50,000 bonuses. Being an MMA promotion, though, they had to slap the fighters down at least a little bit, and the generous became the cruel on a few occasions. When the fighters who missed weight won, The announcer congratulated them, then immediately said, "First of all, I gotta say, it absolutely breaks my heart to tell you that you don't get the bonus, because that was a $50,000 performance, but because you missed weight, my friend, you don't get it." John Lineker's immediate reaction was to start begging, "Chatry, please, my family, I need the money," to no apparent avail. Please discourse on this special brand of cruelty, unique in its timing and significant financial consequences to a fighter who just quote-unquote won his fight. This is like some cruel shit. This is some it's almost like Squid Game or something. Like, these guys are going to fight, but then we're going to be like, "No, you didn't fulfill the entertainment clause in your PFL contract. You didn't make weight in one FC, so we're not giving you the money."
Do we got to tell them live on TV like that? We got to get that real live visceral reaction. Yeah. You got to capture that. Also, this feels like one of those memes where it's like, you know, what could you say during sex, but also at the dentist or something. Like, this is like, what could you say during an MMA event for one FC, but also while a gunman is holding you hostage in a basement? "Please, Chatry, my family." You know, like, is that the kind of content we wanted to come out of this? You know, the fighters out there. I mean, I guess it is only a different species of the same thing we see in the UFC all the time with people begging Dana White to give them a performance bonus. But "please, my family." I don't know if that sends the best message to viewers who are like, so this is a professional sport, right? These guys are on TV and everything.
Next question this week, probably the last question we will take this week, comes from Rob, who writes, "SummerSlam has 4 main event matches. Is that the co-co-co main event? Is there a multiplier if you have an even number? Is it just a co-co main event? When will the madness end?" See, I didn't know this. SummerSlam was over the weekend. I assume, let's see here, your top 4 fights on the card were Seth Rollins against Finn Balor for the World Heavyweight Championship, Bianca Belair in, it looks like, a 3-way dance with Asuka and Charlotte Flair for the Women's WWE Championship. Io Sky, who's a person I've never heard of before, then defeated Bianca Belair by pinfall, which was for the WWE. Oh, she must have cashed in the money in the bank there and won. And then you had Roman Reigns defeat Jey Uso by pinfall for the undisputed WWE Universal Championship. So is that the 4, or did we count Gunther defeated Drew McIntyre for the Intercontinental Championship? So maybe that was considered one of the main events. I don't know. You know, WWE's gotten out of control. When they had WrestleMania go multiple nights, when you can't even squeeze WrestleMania into one night, I think you probably crossed a Rubicon of sorts. And now that you got Vince McMahon back, you know, he's just in the office like Lex Luthor, turning around in his chair to deliver his evil proclamations. I'm not surprised we got 4 main events. And if you ask me, the bigger problem is all those damn championships that I just read off. You got the World Championship, you got the WWE Championship, you got the Universal Championship. That's too many championships, man. You need to have one. You need to have the World Championship, you need to have the Intercontinental Championship, and you need to have the Tag Team Championship. Those are your 3 championships. You can't be out here having 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 championships, because then I don't know what the real championships are. It boggles the mind.
What a purist. I mean, okay, here's what I'll say. If there's ever a sport where you can do dumb shit like 4 main events, it's professional wrestling. That's the carnival of carnivals. So, okay, go ahead. It was a little bit more grating to me back when the UFC was trying to make stuff like featured prelim a thing.
Yeah.
And where it was just like, all right, I understand what you're trying to do. You're trying to make everything sound as special as possible. But if everything is special, then nothing is special. The whole idea loses traction at that point, that some bouts are more important than others on any given night of fighting. And as we've talked about, you see some UFC events where you're like, okay, this one really has a main event. This one only has a main event. This one just has a fight that is last, you know?
And I think the savvy viewer gets pretty good at determining which is which. The thing that sucks about being a combat sports fan, and here I would say you could even lump in some aspects of professional wrestling into this, I just wish we weren't asked to swallow so much bullshit and pretend that it was fine. You know, like, just don't lie to us so much. Don't constantly make us out here being like, wait, is this real or are you unnecessarily bullshitting us? Because obviously we will watch fucking anything. You know, if we've proven anything over the course of the last few years, it's that we will watch whatever you put on there. So you don't gotta do this, man. You don't gotta lie to us all the time about how important everything is when it's really not. You can just be like, here is some shit and we will watch it. We will do that. It's not great for us. It's not really a great sign about our intelligence or character, but we will do it. You don't have to lie all the time.
And with that, we'll bring the end of listener mail. If you have a question, comment, or concern that you want to air to the podcast in future weeks, you know how to do it. You go to the website, comainevent.com, and click the link at the top right-hand corner of the screen that says email the podcast. That'll get you in touch with us. As for right now, we're going to go ahead and get started with round number one. Well, Ben, Jake Paul did it again. He outlasts Nate Diaz in their boxing match at the American Airlines Center in Dallas, Texas over the weekend. Unanimous 10-round decision. Jake Paul moves to 7-1 as a professional boxer, rebounds from February's loss to Tommy Fury, which is a split decision. I guess you got to win the next one after you lose to Tommy Fumbles. But here we are, Jake Paul, Nate Diaz. You know, we like to say on this podcast, everybody gets to do their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Jake Paul, this whole weekend, pretty much, everything that you would expect to happen happened. Jake Paul won a unanimous decision over Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz was unrepentant after it was over. Nick Diaz said he wants to fight Jake Paul. Jake Paul beefed online with both Conor McGregor and KSI. A bunch of dudes brawled in a mall or something like that. It was just like all of the shit that you expect to happen in and around Jake Paul fight weekend happened. And so I guess my question is, I don't think it can be argued that you're starting to get some diminishing returns here from the Jake Paul professional boxing career. My question is, how bad is it now that you have like a template, like a formula? Like, this is just the shit that happens. It's like an episode of Cheers, right? You know, like Sam is going to have a problem that he has to solve with Diane, and Norm's mm-hmm. going to come in. And everybody's going to be like, Norm, and Cliff's going to be sitting over there complaining about his job. You know what's going to happen? Probably dating myself. No one listening to this podcast has ever seen an episode of Cheers, but this is what you get from a Jake Paul fight. And now we've seen it over and over and over again. Not only do I feel like maybe we're getting a little bit disinterested in Jake Paul, the fighter, but just like the whole shit, you're just like, oh, yeah, this is what happens. Like, of course, Nick Diaz is going to want to fight Jake Paul. And of course, KSI and Conor McGregor are going to jump on the Twitter machines and they're going to have their words and shit like that. It feels rote to me at this point.
First of all, I have some factual questions about what happened here. Since, as you know, I was on a plane at the time that this is going on. You say Jake Paul beat Nate Diaz. However, I feel like I saw still images suggesting Nate Diaz submitted him with a standing guillotine.
Yeah. He also had almost had a single leg in the first round. So there was that. You'll be astonished to know that Nate Diaz thought that he won the fight. And that even as I watched it, I was like, did Nate Diaz win this according to Stockton rules? Because Jake Paul does fade down the stretch here, and Nate Diaz comes on and does some of his best work. Paul rebounded a little bit in the last round, so maybe that undercuts your your argument that he won by Stockton rules, but there's just, there was plenty, just plenty of opportunity for the Diaz brothers to claim victory here.
Well, as far as the question of diminishing returns, I mean, at least seemed to me like while the lead up to this fight felt really quiet, to the point where even Jake Paul was like, what the fuck, man? Is this guy going to help me promote this fight? Like, he hasn't done anything crazy at all. Like, is he going to throw a can of Monster Energy at me or what? And then you get to fight week, and it did seem like they successfully chewed up most of the attention in the combat sports space, right? Like, it seemed to me, like, just as somebody who was sort of passively following along in between slam ball highlights, that they were the thing that most people were talking about, and they had a lot of media at their stuff who were talking about that. Seemed like a very exciting, electric atmosphere in the building. You're up against a sort of forgettable UFC fight night event. It just seemed like the ability of Jake Paul to pick on some MMA guy, do something at least at the weigh-ins or press conference or something to grab a little bit of attention, and then get everybody talking about it one way or another, it seems like that part is still pretty much intact.
Yeah, I guess so. Here's let me just read to you the top headlines on MMA Fighting as we record this, MMAfighting.com. You got, of course, there a top left-hand corner, the MMA Hour. You got that going. But here's the headlines. Conor McGregor blasts Jake Paul, Nate Diaz Christ. In nasty social media posts. Paul and Diaz respond. That's one.
Of course,
Nate Diaz explains how shoulder injury affected Jake Paul fight strategy. Jake Paul explains why he didn't get the finish after scoring nasty knockdown of Nate Diaz. Nick Diaz calls to fight Jake Paul or Logan Paul after Nate Diaz lost. Quote, I'm a lot better than both these guys. Then you get matches to make after UFC Nashville with Tatiana Suarez there. You get a Corey Sandhagen headline. The Corey Sandhagen suffers fully torn bicep at UFC Nashville. Then you got Jake Paul versus Nate Diaz, full video highlights. Then you got hot tweets where Jake Paul goes from here, Corey Sandhagen's title hopes, rug, and more. So I just read you all those headlines. Two of them are about MMA. The fights to make featuring Tatiana Suarez has two comments, and at least the Jake Paul stories are all in double digits of comments, yeah. If that tells you anything about what we're talking about this week.
Yeah, well, and it seems like what we were saying before and after the whole Tommy Fury thing was that Jake Paul shit clearly does not work as well in the world of boxing on boxing fans as it works on MMA fans, even if you're still doing boxing, technically. So going back to the well here, being like, who is a polarizing but popular figure from MMA? Nate Diaz, I could pick on him. And it also seems like at least a little bit of, if not an upward move, then a lateral move from where we've seen him in the past. Where, you know, you start out, you're like, okay, I'm going to fight Ben Askren. And we're like, LOL, fine. And, you know, knocks him out and beats him. Then you can fight Tyron Woodley. Oh, shit. Well, okay. You know, and wins the decision and then knocks him out and beats him in the second one. And then going to fight Anderson Silva. And we went, you son of a bitch. You're going to pick on Anderson Silva in his golden years and gets the decision there. Then you're going to fight Nate Diaz, where we went, okay, he's a little bit closer to his prime, is more of a striker than a lot of these other guys, but you have him sort of outsized in a fight like this, and we've seen a little bit of declining performances from him, so you know, maybe it's not unreasonable to think you could win that one too. The thing is, you gotta find some way to keep up in the stakes, kind of. Like, you can't turn around if you're Jake Paul and fight Nick Diaz now. You just can't. We will not allow it. Because that's uninteresting. Nick Diaz at this point seems like he should not be fighting anybody. When people are beating you and then asking you if you're okay in life, that's not a great sign. And that, however diminished Nate Diaz is at this point, Nick Diaz is worse. So you can't go from there. It'll feel like a step down. It'll feel completely uninteresting and like the stakes are completely removed. So you got, if you're still doing the Jake Paul thing and you've learned, boxing people, this doesn't really work on them. MMA people, it still kind of works on them, but only if you keep cranking it up each time. So where do you go from there?
You go to an MMA fight, right? Jake Paul is talking about doing it. Maybe Jake Paul and Nate Diaz in an MMA fight is what's next. And we talked about this a while back, that maybe this would be a savvy business move for Jake Paul to flip the script a little bit here and go do something else that might, in fact, rekindle some interest in his career. Since, like I said before, it kind of feels like you're starting to get diminishing returns here in the boxing game. It sounds like the Jake Paul fights just aren't really even any fun anymore, right? He started out his career with 4 stoppage wins out of 5 fights. And then starting with the Anderson Silva fight, he's gone unanimous decision, split decision loss, unanimous decision. The 2 wins, of course, over Anderson Silva and Nate Diaz. And I don't know that those 2 fights were that fun to watch. So I don't know if Jake Paul is going to be fighting 40-year-old MMA fighters and it's not going to be that fun of a fight. I don't know why we're watching. And so I think maybe the MMA fight is the smart thing for Jake Paul to do, honestly.
Maybe he fights Rug.
Rug. Oh, he don't want that smoke. He doesn't want to get in there with Rug. Omar Kane, we're talking about the same Rug. He doesn't. Nah, Jake Paul don't want that.
How about he fights Rug with the stipulation that if Rug grabs his gloves, he will automatically be disqualified.
Before we move on, we should not lose sight of the fact that Jake Paul's 7 professional boxing victories are: first, against Ann Esson Gibb, all one word, who I believe he's got to be an influencer of some kind. Then he beat former NBA player Nate Robinson. Then he beat Ben Askren. Then he beat Tyron Woodley twice. Then he beat Anderson Silva. Then he beat Nate Diaz. Those are the guys he's beaten as a professional boxer. I'm just saying, I guess. Those are the guys he's beaten.
You just listed off guys he's beaten and acted like you made a point.
I did make a point. Those are the guys he's beaten as a professional boxer. Ain't none of those guys boxers. Ain't none of them. Not a one. The one boxer he did fight, Tommy Fumbles, lost. He lost to that guy.
If I'm in Jake Paul's manager or advisor, I'm like, I think we found something that works and we found something that doesn't work.
I'm just going to keep doing it over and over. All right, let's do Are You Fucking Kidding Me? And then we'll move on to round number 2. Now, Ben, I believe we may have a joint Are You Fucking Kidding Me this week. Is that correct?
Yeah.
So you've got this thing going on between Jamal Hill and Ariel Helwani. Jamal Hill, of course, the now former UFC light heavyweight champion. He had to drop the strap when he blew out his Achilles tendon, I believe, in a basketball game. Now he's got to go get surgery. He'll be out for a while. I have in my notes, this is what I wrote down. I wrote, what are we doing with this Jamal Hill, Harry Helwani thing? Because it's not totally clear to me. It seems like Jamal Hill is mad at Ariel Helwani, that Ariel Helwani asked Yuri Prochazka some questions that Jamal Hill didn't like, and he didn't like Yuri Prochazka's answers, and he has since, you know, gone back to the old song and dance of calling Ariel Helwani an instigator, talked about him on his own YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera. Kind of has revived this discussion that maybe no one in MMA knows what the media does. Just like zero people understand what the media's job is in mixed martial arts. And I will ask again, what are we doing with this? Doesn't make any sense to me at all.
Well, I have an answer, I think, on this one. What are we doing if you're Jamal Hill? Because I had to catch up on this whole thing when I saw Jamal Hill and Ariel Helwani are beefing, and I went, what? Why? And had to kind of work my way back through. I was reading this thing on Bloody Elbow where they kind of took me through the sort of evolution of this beef between the two of them. And the thing is, first of all, where you're going to get mad about questions he asked somebody else that had to do with you, you being the guy who was, until this injury, the champion in the division, people are going to ask questions about you. People are going to have opinions about you. And to get mad at the phrasing of the questions about you, that does seem like some of the anti-Ariel classic, where we would go back to calling him an instigator all the time. But as far as what we're doing for Jamal Hill, it seems like what we're doing is trying to come up with enough of a rivalry that people will be aware that you're doing stuff on YouTube, that you have your own show. Yeah. Because he gets into it with Ariel, they go back and forth, and then Ariel, it seems like, very sort of diplomatically kind of comes back and is like, hey, you know, whatever, man, it's come on my show and we could talk about it. I wasn't trying to disrespect you or anything. And instead, he responds saying that, you know, he doesn't want to, here's his quote: "To be honest with you, I have no interest in coming on your show. I've been on your show multiple times before, and leading up into it, gave you a really great sports soundbite for your show, and I see the respect I got for that. So now, if you truly want to talk and have a conversation, you can come on my show. You can come right now, Champ Chat Podcast, first ever guest. You can come on and we can talk." That's what we're doing here. Yeah. That's no, what Jamal right. Hill's. Yeah. He's injured. He can't fight. It would be nice to get a little YouTube money coming in. And so what do? You try to poke at Ariel Helwani a little bit, knowing that especially in recent years, Ariel Helwani has been a little bit more, no more Mr. Nice Guy. And if you clap, Ariel will clap back and get a 10-7 on your ass on the MMA Fortnite. And at least if you can create that back and forth, then now maybe a whole lot of people who are like, Jamal Hill has a show? Jamal Hill is something on you? We're going to be like, oh, okay, like, let me go check that out. And then maybe, you know, you get a little momentum, and you might as well, because you're injured and you can't fight. That's what we're doing. And are you fucking kidding me? It is lame.
I mean, to his credit, I guess I did just find out that Jamal Hill is active on YouTube because of this Ariel Helwani beef. So,
but you got to pick a better thing to beef about, man.
Yeah.
You can't. It can't just be like, I can't believe, you know, this guy asking these questions in this way about, like, what? Come on, man. You got to come up with something better than that.
You fucking kidding me?
Fucking kidding me?
That's going to do it for round number one. We'll be right back with round number two.
So, Chad, let me set the scene for you. After I'm getting everybody their stuff in the Salt Lake City airport, I'm trying to get everybody situated while we wait to board on the gate. I start to get like see the tweets on my phone just as we're about to board, where people are like, oh, you know, good first round. Corey Sandhagen looking good in the first round. I'm going, all right, good for you, Corey. By the time I get off the plane, Corey Sandhagen has won the fight kind of 50-45s across the board. And I go, well, this must be a good news situation for Corey Sandhagen, right? Then I start doing a little more reading, and it doesn't take long before I get to tweets such as, Dana White walked out before the fight was over. People just being like, oh God, this shit is so boring. People getting mad at Corey Sandhagen by the end of this fight that he won, blanked on all scorecards. Is this just, we have certain expectations, we have a little bit of rigidity in our minds about what we want to get out of these kind of fights? Because you send Corey Sandhagen in there, he's going to tell you afterwards, dealing with some injury stuff, and
tore his tricep. You know,
I thought it was bicep.
Tricep, right?
Okay. Fully tore, as I believe is how you said it earlier.
First round. Let me
fully tore it.
Let me just double check that.
Now, I mean, here's a guy where he was on the come up after that Frankie Edgar knockout. He lost two in a row, and people started to be like, oh, Corey Sandhagen never going to turn into anything. Then he gets a couple wins. And then he gets in this fight where it's like, okay, we're changing opponents and everything. We end up with a 140-pound catchweight bout against Rob Font. You get in there, maybe things don't go great for you, and you're like, the thing you really want to make sure you do at that point is win. Yeah. And especially if you feel like, well, now I'm encountering some adversity that I was not expecting. And you probably have a feeling where when you win that fight at the end, you go, good job, man. You really gutted it out and you did it. And then you fire up the Twitter and everybody's like, Dana White walked out. We hate Corey Sandhagen now because of the fashion in which he won. And you got to go, God damn it, man. Do you guys think this is easy?
Yeah. No, fully torn tricep in round one. Corey Sandhagen to have surgery next week, he says. So, yeah. No, I agree. Perhaps the proper response here is, hey, Corey, good job. Way to win the fight after suffering a fucking terrible significant arm injury in the first round of a 25-minute fight against a tough-ass dude like Rob Font. The tricep is an important muscle in the arm.
Yeah.
I don't know how many people know that, but if you tear it, that probably sucks pretty bad. Corey Sandhagen goes on to blank Rob Font all the way across the board in all five rounds of this thing and get the win. Oh, by the way, he wasn't even supposed to fight Rob Font. He was supposed to fight Umar Nurmagomedov, who pulled out last month and was replaced by Rob Font in 140-pound catchweight. So, change of opponent, catchweight, torn tricep in the first round. Not a guy you think of really as a dominant wrestler. And that's the fucking performance he puts in. And after that, we're mad. We're mad at Corey Sandhagen for not entertaining us more. Get the fuck out of here.
Well, okay. Do you think some of it has to do with we sit around all night waiting for a fight night main event? And a lot of these fight night cards, they don't have a ton to grab your interest. So the main event is usually the one where it's like, okay, here's a fight where some people we know, some actual relevant divisional stakes. And so by the time you get there, especially for people who are like, you know, God damn, it's midnight on the East Coast and I set up for like a six fight main card or whatever it is some nights to get there. And especially one where I was looking forward to a certain kind of fight and then you don't get that kind of fight. Do you think that that makes people way angrier than they would be if he did this in the mid card of a pay-per-view?
Probably, but I would remind them once again, who should they be mad at for that? Okay. Should they be mad at injured ass Corey Sandhagen, who still got the win? Or should they be mad at the UFC for week after week, giving them nothing but fucking filler content that goes on until 1 o'clock in the morning, East Coast time? Probably they shouldn't be mad at Corey Sandhagen, who won the fight despite a dreadful injury, which unfortunately is another one of the things that we just expect from MMA fighters. We expect you to go out there and fight if you have a pre-existing injury, and we expect you to go out there and still win the fight if you get injured in the first round. If Corey Sandhagen had lost, and this is a point that you like to make a lot, nobody would have been like, hey, Corey, good job competing in the rest of that 25-minute fight because you had a torn tricep. Everybody would be like, Corey Sandhagen lost to Rob Font. Corey Sandhagen must have been overrated this whole time. That's what they would
say. Hype train derailed is what they say at that point. They're not like, well, hey, thank you for going out there and trying to stand and bang anyway.
Yeah.
Even if it was a terrible idea. And again, like if you're the fighter, you got to feel like, hey, I was really tested there in a way where I had to get through some things. And that's one of the things that makes this sport so different than so many other sports where, man, I've watched basketball games where dudes will disappear to the locker room for a chipped tooth. And not come back out for 10, 15 minutes. And you're just like, first of all, you don't need that tooth to play basketball. That thing could get knocked completely out of your mouth. And it should not affect your basketball ability at all. And they get that kind of moment to be like, wait, hold on. Let me think about this. Let me deal with it and everything. And then be like, okay, I'm ready to play again. And you don't get that in fighting. Something bad happens to you, something unexpected, whether it's a result of something the other guy has done to you or not. You've got to adjust on the fly and deal with it. And to have a major part of your body basically go out on you and then have to be like, okay, what can we do?
Yeah.
How do you stay in that fight mentally and physically at that point? And to get that done and to win that fight and then have everybody be like, sucked. The shit sucked, bro. That's got to be dispiriting. I mean, I hope he's not taking that part of it too personally and be like, okay, on to the next one, you know. If that happens, and the best thing is that you got your win bonus, you kept the winning streak alive, and you get to move on and hopefully have a better one next time out. It's just, it's unforgiving, man.
I mean, what he's probably thinking is, I hope my arm still works the same after I get my tricep reattached to the tendon and bone that it completely ripped off of. That's probably what he's thinking. I have said this before for the entire 11 years that we've been doing this show, but I will say it one more time. If you're going to have the fights be real, if we're not going to fucking pro wrestling this shit and you want to have actual on the level competitive fights between two professional MMA fighters, guess what? Some of the fights aren't going to be great. They're not all going to be great. Every now and then you're going to get a stinker. Every now and then you're going to get kind of a boring fight where a guy tore his tricep in the first round, he still wins. That's just what happens. If you want every single one to be fucking four co-main events, go watch wrestling, because that's what they do. That's why they fake it, is to make it more exciting than actual competitive sports, which are not always that exciting. I will also say, this shit trickles down from the top. This attitude trickles down from the top for the entire reign of Dana White in the UFC, going all the way back to when the Fertitta brothers bought the company. We have been told to expect that what we want out of MMA fights is a wild brawl. That's what they want. They financially incentivize people to fight that way. If you don't fight that way, they will run you down in the media and every other place they can. The most famous fights in UFC history are the fucking crazy brawls like Forrest Griffin and Stefan Bonner. And here you got the headline about Corey Sandhagen: Dana White walks out. Once again, just unpromoting the guys who have just gone out there and given him a main event and got the win despite a debilitating injury.
What I'm hearing you say is that we should be fixing these motherfuckers.
If we want every one of them to be exciting, that's kind of the only way to do it. I say again, that's why they created pro wrestling. Because actually watching two guys wrestle with an undetermined time limit turned out to be pretty fucking boring. And they were like, hey, we would make more money with this shit if you and I got together and figured out how to make a more exciting match. That's why they did it. Just saying.
Man. Just saying. Just saying came early this week.
Well, we still got another one. We got two more. That's coming up in round three. We're going to get started with that right now. Well, Ben, this is how we do it in this sport. We turn the page. We are on to next week's fight night, featuring a welterweight contest between Vicente Luque and Rafael Dos Anjos. Thank you, Tennessee. We are back to the UFC Apex in Las Vegas, Nevada for this one. Vicente Luque and Rafael Dos Anjos, as I said at the top of the show, is going to be a good fight. Hey, these are two guys that are going to go out there and they're going to let it all hang out and they're going to swang them thangs. That's what they're going to do. If you were mad about Corey Sandhagen wrestling Rob Font, you're probably going to like this one better, because here you got two guys who are basically action fighters. Maybe Rafael Dos Anjos will wrestle. I don't know. Vicente Luque comes in on the heels of two consecutive losses. Rafael Dos Anjos, the former champion, slightly better. He comes in here 3-1 in his last four. And with this fight, he has his second consecutive welterweight fight after beating Brian Barberina last December via second round neck crank. What are you thinking about this one? Does this get you hyped at all, considering that we're still running these fight nights back to back to back? At least you got Vicente Luque and Rafael Dos Anjos, who are probably going to have an entertaining fight.
Yeah, and it should be an interesting matchup stylistically to see how this one goes. So I am interested. It also seems like we kind of took two guys where we're not sure exactly what we want to make of them right now. And we said, well, let's have them fight each other and see who is actually going to be a relevant factor going forward. Because you got Rafael Dos Anjos, where, you know, he's kind of bouncing back and forth between lightweight and welterweight, had a cup of coffee with the belt, and now he's 38 years old. And it seems like a lot of the stuff that he liked to do is starting to work a little less and less well as time goes on, especially at welterweight against some of these bigger dudes. And then you have Vicente Luque, where it's like, that boy pretty good.
Yeah.
When he gets to do his stuff, that boy pretty good. I don't know. I think this is kind of a tough one for Rafael Dos Anjos, you know? Just stylistically, I think that he could have a hard time doing a lot of the stuff he likes to do against Luque.
Well, and Vicente Luque needs to win it. He comes in off back-to-back losses to Bilal Muhammad and Jeff Neal. Prior to that, this guy had been really, really good. He lost his UFC debut to Michael Graves way back in 2015, and since then had gone, I believe, 14-2 with losses to Leon Edwards and the Wonder Man. He just had won four in a row: Nico Price, Randy Brown, Tyron Woodley, Michael Chiesa, before he dropped those two straight. So Vicente Luque, as I said, just had been very, very good. And then he has this, I guess you'd say, a mini skid here where he's lost two fights in a row. Probably don't want to lose three. Might be better for you to win this one than lose it. Vicente Luque, just a slight underdog to Rafael Dos Anjos at the moment. Dos Anjos going off at minus 118. Vicente Luque going off at minus 102. So pretty close. Basically a pick'em. Just a very, very slight favorite there for Rafael Dos Anjos. And maybe it's just based on he's been more successful recently.
He has. I guess I have a hard time feeling like the stuff that he has been successful at doing, I don't know if you're going to be able to do it to Vicente Luque. Just because I feel like you're going to go up there against a bigger guy, and a guy who, while he's not necessarily known primarily for his wrestling, if you look at the guys who have really been able to out-wrestle Vicente Luque, it's the guys who are really fucking good, especially at welterweight. And Rafael Dos Anjos, where it seemed like when he was at his best, it was sort of in that weaponized pace kind of way, where he could get in your face and stay there and make you dance to his tune. Can he do that at the age of 38 against a bigger dude who can hurt you when you stand there with him?
It sounds to me like you're trying to make a case for an underdog bet here.
I mean, you might have to wait till Friday for $20 we never want to see again. Which, by the way, when Jake Paul won a decision, don't think I wasn't sitting there being like, see, that's what I was going to bet. It all seems so clear once you actually see the results. That's what I totally would have bet.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. This would have been the week. Would have been the week, Chad.
Yeah, I know.
That I really hit it big.
I'm looking out there at Tatiana Suarez being like, well, that's just how she wins.
You yeah, know? Of course.
Guillotine choke, that's how she wins. Uh-huh. I probably would have had a five spot down on that.
That's what I was going to say.
Long odds. Probably would have got some plus money on the Tatiana Suarez by submission. So we all missed out there. Speaking of somebody who needs to win one, we talked about Big Dacus getting slightly smaller, moving down to 205. He comes in on the heels of three straight losses at heavyweight. Derek Lewis, Curtis Blaydes, Jarzino Rosenstrike, all of them by first or second round TKO or KO. Prior to that, he had won five fights in a row. So maybe this is part of what he's thinking for Chris Dacus. Like, I've been stopped three times in a row. Maybe I should move down. Maybe I would have better luck against the smaller guys. Unfortunately, if that's what he was trying to do, matchmakers were like, we see what you're doing and we will raise you a fight against Khalil Roundtree Jr.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking. He's like, okay, listen guys, I've thought about it. I am done with these big dudes throwing these power punches at my head. Clearly, I don't like that. It doesn't go very well for me. I would like to go to light heavyweight, please, and not deal with that anymore. And so they go, oh, okay. How about the war horse, Khalil Roundtree Jr., a guy who knows where they keep the weights, a guy who's going to roll in here and basically throw nothing but power shots at you, and is also, you know, pretty good-sized guy with a finishing ability when it comes to throwing them thanks. How you feel about that? And you go, God damn it. I couldn't get a grappler. You don't have a Magomed back there. Like, I couldn't get it. Okay, fine. Fucking fine.
This is exactly the kind of thing I was trying to avoid. Khalil Roundtree very quietly with a three-fight win streak here. And so he comes in as the favorite over Chris Dacus. Before that, Khalil Roundtree had gone 1-3 in his last four. He was actually 2-4 in his last six, but one of those was overturned when his opponent tested positive for clomiphene. And so he has put things back together in the last couple years. Hasn't fought since October of 2022, however, his split decision win over Dustin Jacoby. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets in there and perhaps bounces back from that time off. He is going off as the favorite here. Chris Dacus plus 160, Khalil Roundtree Jr. minus 192. So if Chris Dacus is trying to pull a fast one on us, the odds makers don't necessarily like his chances.
How dare you try to pull a fast one on us? We, as in a community, are much too savvy.
All right, let's go ahead. We'll do Just Saying Stuff, Ben, and then we will get out of here. This week, I will do my Just Saying Stuff because it is UFC on ESPN related. Now, you got the card? You looking at the card in front of you?
I got the card
open. All right. Look down at the prelims. Look down there and see if you see any recognizable names on there. You see anybody you recognize way down there on the prelims?
there's a fellow, it can't be him, it can't be the same guy, but there is, there's a fellow, it's the same weight class, but he's way down there. It couldn't be the Cub Swanson.
Cubby Sampson! How are you going to play him like that? How are you going to put Cub Swanson all the way down on the prelims? Now, I guess we should say, by way of disclaimer, sometimes these Wikipedia fight cards, they're not in the exact same order as the fights actually go off on Saturday, but they're usually pretty close. How you gonna put Cub Swanson in the second fight of the night, one short of the curtain jerker, in a fight that is probably going to be fireworks against Hakeem Duwato? How you gonna do this? How you gonna play Cubby Sampson like that? Put some respect on the name of Kevin Luke Swanson. I'm just saying, this is an insult. I would be insulted if I was Cub Swanson.
Okay, though, hear me out. What if he has somewhere to be later that night, and he has to go to his daughter's piano recital or something, and he was like, hey, do you guys suppose I could get in there early and just get my stuff over with so I can hit both these events in one night?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe he had a previous engagement. Maybe mm-hmm. that's what it was. He had lost four fights in a row, 2017 to 2019, but he's bounced back, man. He's 3-2 in his last five. He comes in off a loss to Jonathan Martinez, but he's not putting up Tony Ferguson numbers in terms of the win-loss here. How are you going to put Cub Swanson all the way down on the early prelims? I'm just saying.
He's probably double booked. That's the only thing I can figure. That's me just trying to make sense of the situation, because otherwise, Chad, it wouldn't make no damn sense.
Ben, what's your just saying stuff this week?
Well, Chad, I'm just saying, suppose for a moment that in reality, what if Conor McGregor has not actually touched any social media in months? What if Conor McGregor forgot he even had a Twitter, forgot he even had any social media accounts? What if he got locked out of his accounts, has just decided to go out and touch grass, has decided not to engage in that anymore, and instead just set up a bot, like a reply bot, a Conor McGregor bot, whose only instruction is to find a way, clumsily or not, to insert himself into whatever is happening at that very moment in the world of combat sports? I'm just saying, Chad, if that had happened, if that were the reality we were living in, how would you know?
You might not.
How would it be discernibly different from the current reality where you know when some shit happens? Doesn't matter which combat sport, doesn't really matter that much who's involved or what weight class, just whatever just happened. You know that the Conor McGregor socials are going to find a way to just sort of like ham-fistedly try to plug him in there every single time. I'm just saying, we have to at least consider the possibility that all this is being done by just an automated system at this point.
Conor McGregor AI chatbot.
Mm-hmm.
They are testing artificial intelligence on the Conor McGregor Twitter page.
When you look at what we're dealing with, it seems to me like, you know, you could go ahead and program some of these tweets in advance.
Yeah. Most of them don't even have the other guy's names in them. Most of them is just like random. You could absolutely schedule those the way I have often said you should schedule fights during fight night that just say great fight with a hashtag for the event. They probably put you on TV.
You just, whatever's going to happen this weekend, he could go in there on a Wednesday set to post at like 12:15 a.m. Sunday morning, right after the main event has wrapped up, and it could just say, I beat him in two. And that's it. That's all he needs to do. And then it will knock over all the necessary dominoes until all the websites will be like, Conor McGregor says this, these guys respond. Then there you go. You don't even have to pay any attention to it. You can set it and forget it. I'm just saying, that's the point that we've reached.
Conor McGregor breaks silence on Jake Paul, Nate Diaz. All right, that's going to do it this week for the Co-Main Event Podcast. We'll be over on the Patreon page all week. We got the Wednesday live chat, Thursdays doing the damn thing, and Fridays Power Hour. So check us out over there, patreon.com/co-main-event. As for right now, though, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you when we see you. We're done. We are through. We are out. probably gives you more time to sail around the world to bring awareness to water sports or water safety, whatever it was when you're scheduling your tweets and things.
Yeah, listen, when you're out there on the yacht, you're messing around with some jet skis and whatnot, you don't always know if you're going to have a strong signal when the main event ends. You gotta program that shit ahead of time. You got to schedule some of these.
Yeah, you might not even have service out there at all. You might as well just schedule a couple of tweets that said, these guys are bums. And
yeah,
there you go.
You don't want to miss the opportunity to tweet that.